Hi, this is Sex Ed Debunked, a cross-generational podcast hosted by mother-daughter duo Christine and Shannon Curley.
Every episode, we tackle a new myth about sex, sexuality, and pleasure and use research and expert insights to debunk stereotypes and misinformation from the bedroom and beyond.
In 2022, we won the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists Award for Best Podcast.
And also managed to not totally freak out our family and friends along the way.
We believe in healthy, sex-positive, pleasure-focused sex education backed by real research and real experience.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at sexeddebunked or email us at sexeddebunked@gmail.com to share your sex miseducation tales and the myths you'd like to hear us debunk.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, and welcome to Sex Ed Debunked, a cross-generational podcast about sex positivity, sexual health, and how much shorter every rom-com would be if they never had to choose just one partner.
I want them both.
I want it all. It's 2022. We can have it all.
So on today's episode, we're talking about myths around opening up a relationship, including the myth that an open relationship requires adding another partner.
Mm-hmm.
In our spring semester, we debunked the myth that monogamy is best or better and talked about what is known in academia as CNM, or consensual non-monogamy, and in the real world, ENM, or ethical non-monogamy.
Why are they known differently in academia versus real life?
In academia, feels like most people know what consent means.
Oh, so you need something that's more measurable than
exactly.
Ethical.
Exactly. Got it. Because ethics are kind of like a personal thing.
Yeah. No, fair. Whereas consent is universal. Got
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
So after we did this episode on monogamy being best or better and debunked that myth and talked about different types of open relationships and flexible relationships, we got a lot of questions and comments like, yeah, but don't couples only open up their relationship to fix it or like as a band-aid, as a last-ditch effort? Isn't an open relationship just cheating in disguise?
Mm-hmm. That's things a common like that. One.
But the most frequent question we got was, funny enough, was, okay, but actually, how does one go about opening up a relationship? Asking for a friend, right?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Everybody asking for a friend. And actually, I've actually had students ask me that question because
mm-hmm.
I've done sexuality guest lectures in various classes. And I've had students come up going like, that sounds really interesting.
How do you start that conversation?
But however, knowing we didn't exactly have the expertise to answer that question, or quite frankly, some of the others, for that matter, we invited a trusted expert and friend to join us on the podcast today, Nancy Sutton Pierce, or Dr. Nan.
Tune in and listen to our interview. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
So can you tell us a little bit about, well, we know it, but can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background?
Oh, my. Well, I started off in this world as a nurse, as a young adult woman, as a registered nurse, and I was drawn to female health. I did OB, and then my career kind of shifted in turn because of having kids and trying to have a family and doing all that. And I ended up running an outpatient diabetes center. And ironically, that's where I got comfortable with really talking to people about sex, was because of so many people having sexual dysfunction who have diabetes. And so I had to become quickly comfortable talking to mostly men, but women also, about sexual dysfunction. And what is healthy sex and what is intimacy and all of those things.
So how did you develop the expertise around sexuality, starting from nursing, then diabetes, and now sexuality?
Oh my, well, that takes me into my next phase where I ran an outpatient, or I ran a yoga studio. And so I became a yoga therapist. And in that path, I started writing, I had a friend ask me to write a sex and relationship column for an online news magazine, because I was always very open about the body and sexuality and intimacy. So she asked me to do that. And then another friend of mine who started a radio show asked me to do a weekly radio show, which was called The Conscious Living Show. So between the two of those, I started dabbling in kind of my curiosity around the difference between erotica and porn. Mm. In 2012, I created an erotic film festival in Jamaica. And I had to get judges. And so one of the judges that I met that went with us, Dr. Ava Cadell, was a sexologist to the stars in LA. I had never even really heard of a sexologist before. So I didn't know that that path existed. Well, after meeting her and her meeting me and our kind of our kindred spirits, mm-hmm. she suggested that that I go back to school and get my doctorate in human sexuality.
Oh boy!
And I thought,
yeah, that one.
I'm too old to do that. I'm past that. Well, as it turns out, I wasn't. So in 2015, I earned my doctorate in human sexuality, and that opened up pathways and doors that I didn't even know existed, like traveling to China 3 times to teach groups of 400 to 500 women about sexuality.
Wow.
That's so interesting. It's actually, we actually just did an episode a few weeks ago with Christy Edeong about cultural competency and sex across cultures. So I'd be fascinated to hear more about that experience. But of course, why we brought you here today was for this topic about opening up relationships, which you also have some experience with as a counselor. Is that correct?
Yes.
Awesome.
And part of that came about because of the location where we held the film festival and the fact that I've been there as a guest many times, but I started teaching groups and running events for people that were curious about a more of a, we call it the sexy lifestyle. not necessarily non-monogamy, but more openness, nudity, you know, voyeurism, exhibitionism. I mean, there's a broad gamut of ways to live a sexier life with your partner that don't always include other people, but can. So, so we started exploring and teaching in those environments, and then that was 17 years ago. So, we've been well educated from all of our people that we've met over the years.
So Nan, as the academic here, I'm hearing that you're operationalizing the definition of opening a relationship, perhaps a bit differently than we think of it. So you're not necessarily talking about opening to other people, which it could be, but you're also talking about opening to more sexy possibilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dr. Jess O'Reilly did a TED Talk several years ago, actually, and she called it being monogamish, which I thought was kind of cute. So there's a lot of cute ways of putting it. But I think what it does for me is when you say the sexy lifestyle, it doesn't imply that there's rules that are not the rules that the couple has created. So there's no pressure to be or do, that it's really just couples. Most of the time it's couples that have raised their kids or are getting ready to launch their kids. They've been together for a long time. They're looking for a little bit more spark, maybe even reigniting the spark, starting to feel their age a little bit, you know, and want to wear that sexy outfit, but it's hard to do that at the PTA meeting.
Or they'll definitely talk to you after the meeting.
Yes. And I think it's just about meeting people that are outside of your normal daily life that have other ideas on how to be in a happy marriage.
So back to then the first kind of comment that we got from some of our listeners is, well, someone who's opening up is just trying to fix something that's broken. Is that something that you see in your counseling?
I think that certainly can happen, but usually it's unilateral when that's happening. That one person, you know, I would say, you know, that you meet somebody and they say, well, I'm in a non-monogamous relationship, just my partner doesn't know.
Okay, now that's not what we're talking
about.
That's
very much along the same lines as it's not stealing if you don't get caught.
Right. So I think that when people think about non-monogamy, that's usually what they think about is cheating or the betrayal side of things. And so the couples where it doesn't work well is where one person is the instigator and the other person is resistant or doesn't really understand what the ground rules are. And because I see that a lot. And most of the time, it's the man, in my experience as a counselor, who's pushing it and even tries to surprise his partner with a trip somewhere or an experience without her consent. So those are oftentimes our couples, the person in the couple who's trying to fix something. But if couples are in trouble, I always suggest get your ducks in a row, get your foundation solid before you even venture into that. You know, talk about the sexy ways in which you can be with each other first.
Mm-hmm. In your
experience, then see how it goes.
Has your experience been that couples meet with you before they start to try opening up, or is it like during or after?
I wish they did. I wish they did.
Okay, listen.
And they all wish they did too. You know, so many times I've said, "Oh, I wish you would have contacted me first,
right?
So we could have created a path for you to take baby steps and enjoy the baby steps." And it may be that you take two or three baby steps in and that's enough. And your relationship is hot and fiery. You don't need any more. And that's all you need. You don't have to try to backpedal. And
so
I think it's hard to unring those bells.
Are you willing to tell us
what some of those baby steps are?
We both were like, oh, what are the baby steps?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of baby steps would be going to a swingers club that has a social aspect to it, like a meet and greet, where people get dressed up. It's dinner, it's music, it's dancing, it's like a bar. And also one of the rules that I think is really important is for people to not over imbibe on alcohol or drugs. Because then you're not consensual. You know, right. if you have regret or you have trouble remembering, you're not consenting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother level for me about, you know, you want both people to, if you're going to do something that's fun, you want to be able to remember it and you don't want to remember it with regret, which most people do if they were too drunk.
Right. And I think that would lend itself to meeting with a professional such as yourself to make a clear-headed decision and a clear-headed plan rather than rushing into something because you're under the influence and you think, maybe we should try it. We're both loose, right? Let's give it a go.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
Yeah.
What could go wrong? Well, how much time do you have?
Yeah.
Of course.
And I think the other thing that people miss out on is those sexy conversations that build up to trying something new, man, just having the nervousness about having that conversation about maybe buying some naughty lingerie or something that you surprise your partner with. And that anticipation, that in and of itself can re-spark a lot. And just to get that conversation open, I've seen couples just do those things and have magic happen. It's like it reignites. They remember why they fell in love in the first place.
I love your definition of opening up a relationship. It has opened the term of openness so much in that it doesn't just mean that you're opening it to other people. It means you're opening your own mind to new experiences, and that in itself can open your relationship up.
So the question that I hear, actually, I had an older student, mature student, as we like to say, right? Non-traditional student come up to me after I did a lecture on sexuality. And she said to me, well, how do I have this conversation? How do I even, I've been with my husband for, you know, a couple of decades. How do I even start having that conversation?
I would say to people, well, listen to this podcast.
Thank you very much.
And have a conversation about it. Like, oh, I came across, let's listen to this podcast together. And then we can have a conversation about it, or watch Dr. Jess's TED talk on being monogamish, or, you know, find something that's kind of in neutral territory, an article, a book, a video, a podcast, something that is someone else talking about it, and say, let's listen to this together. And then, and then just ask your partner, so what do you think? Mm-hmm. You know?
And that way both partners kind of have a safe space to talk with reference to something outside of each other.
Absolutely. Not,
hey, I just bought tickets to this nudist resort in Jamaica.
Oh gosh. You know, I've been to that nudist resort in Jamaica 43 times. And so let me tell you, I can tell you some insane stories, but one of the ones that stands out is a man who surprised his little wife from Midwest with a trip there. She didn't know where they were going. He packed for her. Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
Oh no.
Costumes?
And no, he just packed her regular, she had like a little button up lace top, a little blouse and slacks and khakis.
Oh no.
And so we had to take her shopping. But so she shows up and I mean, she was a little bit upset.
Yeah. Well, as anyone would be when they are introduced to an unfamiliar situation without preparation, right?
Yes. Well, and again, and this is what I told them at the time is, she's missed out on all the fun prep work, the fun anticipation. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to take that away from each other. You want that to be part of the stimulus, is that nervousness about what are we going to do and what are the rules and, you know, what if, and having those really important conversations before you get there.
Yeah. I love the idea that it's more fulfilling if you take the plunge together than if one of you's already in the pool.
Right.
Right. Definitely. Well, definitely.
Think about any other trip, Shannon, any other thing that you're planning. The anticipation is half the fun. And honestly, when you've been in a relationship for a long time, like I have, you know, you don't have as much to get nervous and excited about. And nervous is really kind of a fun emotion if you can embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. The butterflies, I call them, you know, it's like we get that, you know, what's happening here? You know, what are we going to do? And I think that one of the other techniques, and you know, you're familiar with this, the oasis that I teach couples is to create a framework of how to have these conversations, kind of rules of the road, so that it's very clearly defined when we're going to sit down and have this conversation, that there's rules of engagement, so that both people understand the intention of this connection, of this experience we're going to have. They know that anything they say in this little oasis can never be held against each other, that it's a sacred space. And they come into this with a heart connection. So they're coming into it with a pure intention, a curiosity about learning about their partner. And if they can do that, and they come in with their own intention, but they also come in with the intention of being open to what their partner's intention is. And then together they can create a mutual intention. Now they're on the same page.
Right. And that's, for our listeners, that's kind of what we would describe as that primary relationship, right? Where you're working from that together.
Right.
And that dovetails really nicely with what they teach us in, you know, in psychology and personality psychology, that as we get older, we do tend to be more open to new experiences and be a bit more extroverted because we've kind of done a lot already. And so there is a search for novelty. But your way, Nan, is kind of a gentle search, like kind of like rather than like, you know, banging down the doors and being like, I want to go swinging off of some, you know, whatever somewhere. You're quietly saying, let's peek behind the curtain together and see what's on the other side.
I think that the other intention is that, you know, if a couple really wants to deepen their bond, that they need to be able to really hear each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's important to learn how to speak your truth, but it's important to learn how to hear the other person's truth and just kind of let that sink in. Mm-hmm. And then move forward from there.
It seems like that process of
building that communication style and setting those boundaries and understanding that foundation is something that really could strengthen the primary relationship, because it is a way of practicing better communication and understanding.
Yes. And I'll share with you, I don't typically share personal experiences, but I'll share one with you because it really is kind of the catalyst for a lot of my work. And this was 17 years ago, before Mark and I ever went to this resort in Jamaica. And we had talked about it for years, 10 years, we had talked about this. And we were driving up the middle of California, a long drive. And we were kind of going back and forth. Well, what do you think? Do you want to go? Well, I don't know. What do you think? Well, maybe if you would want to, but I don't know. So this, you know, this back and forth. And finally, Mark said, all right, stop. Safe space. I just want to know your truth. Anything you say is okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to hear what you want to do. And then I will tell you the same. And so it's like, you know, okay, I guess I can trust this. And mm-hmm. I said, I want to go. And he goes, me too. So I booked it the next day.
Well done. Awesome. Well, you know, we had a guest on the show many episodes ago, but Gary Ware, and we had him on to talk about the importance of being playful and in your relationship. Mm-hmm. And he taught us to refer to a safe space as a brave space, because that's where you get to push your boundaries and open your mind. And it sounds like you and Mark had the ability to create a brave space for one another, which is wonderful.
I love that. That's a great phrase. I'm going to borrow that if you don't mind.
You can borrow it. Yeah. He's Gary Ware.
That's beautiful.
Gary Ware also has a TED talk about play.
I mean, that's so true. You really do have to feel that it is a bravery to step out there and be vulnerable. And that fear of rejection and that fear of judgment is always present. And, you know, we have to really be tender with each other with that understanding that, wow, this really took some bravery to speak the truth.
Well, that was sort of his point, was it's actually the opposite of a safe space, because you're pushing yourself, right? You are actually going outside of your comfort zone. Yeah.
Yes. That is true.
What if you've got a couple here that, I mean, it sounds to me you're talking about couples that are fairly solid, at least. But what if you encounter a situation where one partner wants to be braver, wants to push a little more and open a little more and be a little bit more edgy or adventurous than the other? How do couples deal with that kind of difference?
Well, I think you always have to appeal to the, with the lowest common denominator. So if there are two answers and one of them's a no, it's a no.
Ah, okay.
And that has to be the starting point, so that the person that has a no doesn't feel pressured to change their mind. Now with that being said, oftentimes what happens is they start to think, okay, well, maybe. Ah. Well, what can I, how can I move forward in this and still feel safe, still feel like I can stop if I want to? So usually the person that's absolutely no right out of the chute, either there's some really strong religious belief that will not let them move forward. That's generally what I find, that, you know, you're asking somebody to just completely change who they fundamentally are and how they fundamentally believe. And that's, you can't ask somebody else to do that. They have to decide if they want to do that. So that's the other thing. One of the main questions I get from men is, how do I get my wife to fill in the blank, right? How do I get my wife to? And I just say, you don't.
You don't.
Any other questions? That's a really simple, fast visit.
Yeah.
You don't.
Time's up.
Now it's like, I say, you can inspire, you can invite, you can suggest, you can offer in and arounds, like a pathway of conversation to, you know, all right, if you're not interested in playing with a third person, get a Sibian. You know, you've got an ability to have a feeling like you're having a three-way and there's no other human there. You know, there's ways to get your kicks without pushing a person into where they are going to resent you, and they are going to, they're, it's not going to work out for them in a really deep way. So
what do you hear from couples? Like if you're talking about the, maybe the more reticent partner, what are the questions, what are the boundaries other than religion that have people feeling uncomfortable about opening up their relationship in a broad sense or to other people?
I mean, a lot of it is just around fear of judgment and fear of being left, fear of being abandoned, fear of being found out they're not good enough, the comparison.
Yeah, those are all the shames and the guilt. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's the whole podcast.
Yep. So they're just afraid that you're going to find somebody better, prettier, skinnier, bigger, whatever, you know, whatever your improvement qualities would be. And I think it's both, you know, it's across the genders. It isn't specifically to one gender. So it's just the fear of, and that's why you have to have a really solid foundation, and you have to have rules of engagement, like how to reconnect. If you do step out there, how to reconnect so that you re-secure each other.
Right. How do you keep that primary relationship primary? How do you put the supports in place to make sure you both feel safe in that?
Very important.
Obviously, you've worked with a lot of different couples and a lot of different relationships, but have you seen sort of a range in, you know, have you dealt with same-sex relationships, different-sex relationships? Has there been like an age range? I'd love to hear a little bit more about your clientele within, you know, reason, of course.
Yeah, it's all over the place. Same-sex, both male and female. Young couples in their 20s, other couples in their 60s and 70s. All across the socioeconomic, multicultural. I've had clients that were from India living in Dubai. I mean,
so it's for everyone.
Every country.
That's what they were saying at the Quad S conference, basically, is that it's really becoming talked about at every level.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Culturally, cross-culturally, do you see it as a good thing that people are talking about opening relationships?
I do. I think people will stay married longer if they know that they can stretch the boundaries within that relationship. I think a lot of people get divorced because of cheating.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, so that is like, you know, obviously we've talked about how open relationships can include so many other things, not necessarily another partner. It can be open-mindedness. It can be embracing fantasy. It can be embracing kink, BDSM, whatever. But the truth is many open relationships do evolve into involving other people. So what do you say to those people who say, isn't an open relationship just a fancy term for cheating on your partner?
Well, I would say absolutely not. It's the opposite. Because an open relationship means it's honest. You're open. You're transparent. And cheating is about betrayal and lying.
And dishonesty, sure.
And dishonesty. So, the truth is, I've counseled a lot of people through infidelity, through that betrayal. And the thing that bothered them the most wasn't the sex. It was the lying and the feeling of the betrayal, and more importantly, the feeling that they had a secret with someone else.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
That's the part that is so hurtful, is that intimacy, that shared secret and that shared excitement excluded them.
So it's the partner really feeling left out.
Yes.
And so when you're talking about opening a relationship to other people, you're talking about including everyone in the process, in the communication, in the discussion, in the honesty. But I imagine even if a couple can open up successfully, initially, it's not just one and done, is it?
Oh, no, I think it's a it's an evolution, you know, and I've seen couples that are brand new into it, and then 20 years down the road, and their agreements don't look anything like they used to.
Right.
So it's a very organic evolution. And usually when people first jump in, if they're in agreement, they go nuts. It's like kids in candy stores. You know, it's like they're just like, I want one of those and one of those and one of that. You know?
So that brings up an interesting question for me though, which is when you're working with couples that have opened up their relationships, especially later, but I guess at any point in their lives, how long does that openness tend to last? Like, is there a point, do you think, at which couples are like, cool, that was fun, but we're this age now and we're like ready to return to our primary relationship? Or is it really just dependent on the couple?
I think it's totally dependent on the couple and availability.
What do you mean by that?
And energy. Well, I mean, if you're living in a little Midwestern town somewhere and there's really no place to explore, or, I mean, it requires effort. It's like dating, you know, requires
right.
effort to meet new people, to have experiences, to get dressed up, to go someplace. And so sometimes life gets in the way of that effort that's required to seek it out.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the couple, they have memories, they have their communication, so that doesn't mean that they aren't still very open with each other and that they don't bring in all those memories into their fantasies, into their conversations. So that spice can just keep feeding them for as long as they're breathing, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
So that leads me to another question that I know I've heard a lot. I could never do this because I'd be so jealous.
Yes.
Now, how do you counsel couples around jealousy? And does jealousy disappear after you've been doing this for a while?
I think jealousy is, I think we're taught that jealousy is necessary in relationships. And I say this because if you think about some of the myths around jealousy, that if he really loved you, he'd be jealous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really love somebody, you don't want somebody else to have them. And one of the beautiful words in the sexy lifestyle that I've learned is compersion.
Mm-hmm.
And to really glean joy, true joy, from somebody else's joy that may not have anything to do with you. And when you start to look at some of the deeper meanings of love and relationship and commitment and connection, that oftentimes it has nothing to do with what you're getting or giving. It's just what you're observing and what you're privileged enough to witness another person living.
Mm-hmm.
That's the deeper joy. And so when people can start to go do their own deeper work and realize that their relationship is solid, that they've have a connection, they're talking, there's never any rejection for, you know, whoa, I'm feeling kind of jealous, and your partner goes, all right, let's talk about it, all right, let's work through that. Yeah, it's like, okay, I get it, you know, let me what can I do, how can I help? And when you get that kind of response versus, why are you jealous, you shouldn't be jealous, stop being jealous,
mm-hmm. right,
that's a whole different, you can feel that different energy shift. So when a person can speak their truth, I'm feeling jealous, all right, you're embraced, you're soothed, you're comforted, you're reassured. Okay, it passes.
Right. That's really smart. Because I do think, Nan, that, you know, we've talked about compersion before, just in the concept of, you know, even without opening up a relationship, but understanding that, you know, your partner can go out with friends and do something that you don't like to do, and you can be happy that they're doing it. But I also think that, you know, compersion and jealousy can exist in the same body, in the same person, as long as you have a partner that's willing to help you work through your jealousy stuff, the jealousy that we, you know, we're in the cultural swamp. We've been taught jealousy from a young age. It's hard to let go of it and hard to unravel it.
Well, yeah. And not to invalidate jealousy. A lot of jealousy does come from a place of trauma and insecurity,
right.
and life experience. Mm-hmm. But I think, Nan, to your point, you know, part of the benefit, I would say, of opening a relationship or opening up in general is just that honesty to be able to have those productive conversations where jealousy isn't held against you. It's just there to be understood.
Right. And like with any emotion, I really firmly believe that we're entitled to our emotions, whatever they are. What we're not entitled to is abuse somebody else with our emotion. Mm-hmm. So if you're jealous, then trying to restrict somebody, trying to control them, belittling them, making them feel responsible for your jealousy, that's where we get into toxic relationships. Mm-hmm. And those, I see some of those start to develop in couples that prematurely try mm-hmm. to open up their relationship with other people rather than just opening up their relationship to who they are on a deeper level.
Right. And that's sort of when the intention behind opening the relationship isn't to better the relationship, right? It is for right. ulterior reasons.
So let's yes. just like say it louder for the people in the back. Talk to a therapist, talk to a relationship counselor.
Talk to your first. Partner.
Well, talk to your partner talk and then to talk partner. To a counselor first before you jump down. Jump down that rabbit hole, which could be a fun rabbit hole. But if you don't know what's in front of you, is there a way, Nan, for people who are interested to find counselors, therapists that specialize in this type of, open relationships, ENM, polyamory, things like that?
Absolutely. And I think the one of the benefits, I think, from COVID has been that therapy there's apps, they're online, they're all over the world. So you can access therapists any place. And there's apps where you can actually kind of create your own designer therapist, put in all the parameters that you're looking for, and it'll spit out people that fit those ideas. Like, I'm bisexual, trans, African American, I live in the South. I mean, you can, and then find somebody that can handle all right, that you've got going
out for you. And you're like, oh, wow, this is great.
Is there right. any?
Because I work with a lot of therapists, marriage, family therapists that aren't comfortable talking about these things. They still have a lot of judgment around open relationships. They bring their own dogma into the counseling and then people feel shamed and shut down. And so you want to find somebody that isn't going to do that for you.
Well, and I'm glad you said that because we've had a couple of therapists and counselors on the show before, and we did a particular episode about seeking out therapy for your relationship. And one of the most important takeaways from that episode was don't settle for a therapist that isn't a good fit for you. Like, we understand exactly. that this is a very difficult time to find a therapist in a lot of ways, because in the post-pandemic era, everyone rushed into therapy, like, which good job. But even though it's yes. hard to find a therapist, don't settle for one that doesn't support you, because that will do so much more damage than good.
Interview them.
Is there any particular certification or, professional, letters after the name that anyone should be looking for to find therapists that are accredited or credentialed?
Well, I mean, I think, I'm a clinical sexologist, but I've met some clinical sexologists that aren't necessarily that keen on open relationships. They don't really understand that. They might be more into trans work so I think you really have to investigate, look for people that have some kind of human sexuality education, who understand, and look for people that maybe have some deeper understanding of long-term relationships that are more designer. I specialize in designer relationships.
I love that.
Yeah, that's good.
I think, Nan, you might have to brand your sexy lifestyle and have people certified in that. I think that'll be your next gig.
Okay. Certified sexy lifestylist.
That's right. So, of course, we want to end the episode on a positive note, an uplifting note.
Yes,
so what are couples that you work with what have they said are the benefits of opening up? What have been the positive outcomes of these relationships that they've said or that you've witnessed?
I think they see their partners with whole, all new eyes. They get to see their partner beaming, glowing, feeling more confident, feeling sexier, feeling that sex energy come back. And that for couples that really do this in a healthy way, they fall more madly in love with each other than they've ever been.
Yeah.
Ever been.
That's the best rom-com ever.
Totally.
Well, I think that is a spectacular way to end this episode, Nan. Just the positive aspects of being open and honest and joyful and finding that erotic energy as a couple.
The word that, as you were saying those things, the word that just came to my mind is that it's freeing. Mm-hmm. It is so freeing because you don't have to be afraid to ask for what you want, to speak your truth, to share your thoughts, your ideas, your fantasies, and to have this person, this one person maybe in the world that you can say anything to and still be loved.
Right. Wow. Because love is the ultimate brave space.
It is.
Yeah, that's really good. And again, I want to just reiterate for our listeners that this is not necessarily an endorsement to go running out into the streets and sleeping with every person you can find. It's really an open mind and a commitment to honesty in the pursuit of loving someone.
Yes.
Awesome.
And many people in the sexy lifestyle never, ever have anything to do with another person outside of their relationship.
Right.
Probably more than 50%.
So the myth today was that opening a relationship has to mean adding another partner. The truth is that opening a relationship can also simply mean opening your mind to new experiences, new sensations, and new methods of communicating openly and honestly.
So that's another myth.
Put to bed. Thanks so much to Nan Pierce for joining us. And remember, keep tuning in weekly for new episodes of Sex Ed Debunked. We've got bi-weekly Sex Ed Debunked full episodes and bi-weekly study sessions where we take questions, comments, myths, ideas from listeners like you and talk about them. And hey, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex Ed Debunked.
Bye now.
See you later.
Thanks for tuning in for this week's episode of Sex Ed Debunked. During the course of our podcast, we have limited time together, which means that unfortunately, many identities, groups, and movements may not be represented each week. The field of sexuality and gender orientations, identities, and behaviors are changing and growing rapidly, and we remain committed to being as inclusive as possible.
Please remember that all of us, including us, are learning in this area and may occasionally slip up. We ask that we all continue to be kind to one another so that we can create a truly inclusive and accepting environment. As always, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to reach out to us at Sex Ed Debunked on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Sex Ed Debunked is produced by Trailblaze Media in Providence, Rhode Island. Our sound producer is Ezra Winters, with production assistance from Shea Weintraub.